This is the CSIS Global Health Interview Series at www.smartglobalhealth.org.
On January 12, 2010, a magnitude 7 earthquake struck Haiti, affecting 3 million people. The quake left over 222,000 people dead and displaced over 1.5 million people from their homes. Just a little over 1 year after the quake, we are joined here today by Dr. Catherine Bliss, Deputy Director and Senior Fellow in the Global Health Policy Center, as well as Senior Fellow in the Americas Program, to talk about current health conditions in Haiti. Dr. Bliss, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Can you explain what water and sanitation conditions were like after the quake, and what has been done since then to make conditions better?
Well, first, it's important to understand that water and sanitation conditions were not great in Haiti before the earthquake. In fact, coverage rates were the worst in the Americas and among the worst in the world. For example, in 2008, the World Health Organization UNICEF Joint Monitoring Program in Haiti reported that just 63% of the population had access to an improved water source, with rates as high as 71% in urban areas, but only 55% in rural areas. On sanitation, the pre-earthquake numbers were even more discouraging, with just 17% of the population having access to improved sanitation facilities, such as a connection to a sewer or a septic system, or proximity to a flush or ventilated latrine. In 2008, just 17% of the total 9.8 million people then had access to improved sanitation, and the numbers were 24% in urban areas, but only 10% in the countryside. So in this sense, the earthquake had a negative impact on an already negative situation because it destroyed existing water and sanitation facilities and placed around 1.5 million people who had lost their homes in camps that were not able to afford adequate water and sanitation provisions, at least not right away. Now, in some ways, the water situation in the camps was not so bad, as government and international assistance agencies were able to provide bottled water as well as chlorine tablets or drops to ensure that people were able to treat and drink the water they did receive. But the sanitation situation was more difficult, and it proved to be a real challenge to get adequate facilities to service those 1.5 million people who needed it. An interagency wash cluster, so for water, sanitation, and hygiene, was organized by international organizations and government agencies, and that has worked with the Haitian National Directorate of Water Supply and Sanitation, or DINEPA, to address post-earthquake water and sanitation challenges. And they report having reached an estimated, I think, about 1.72 million people. According to the UN, the wash cluster delivers around 6 liters per person per day to 1 million people and has put in about 15,000 latrines. And the UN is also working on longer-term solutions such as rehabilitating water supplies, establishing committees to oversee water management in some of the camps and other temporary communities. But an ongoing challenge is still emptying and cleaning the latrines in the camps, where at least 1 million people were still living as of January 2011.
Of the numerous health concerns in Haiti after the quake, the cholera outbreak definitely gained a significant amount of media attention. Can you explain what cholera is and how it originally came to Haiti?
Well, so cholera is a waterborne bacterial infection that causes severe diarrhea, leading to dehydration and, in many cases, death. So the cholera outbreak was reported in mid-October of 2010. Since then, there have been nearly 200,000 cases and nearly 4,000 deaths, with an overall fatality rate of about 2% nationwide. And the Pan American Health Organization, or PAHO, which is the regional arm of the World Health Organization, so it's the WHO America's office, PAHO estimates that there could be up to 400,000 deaths within the first 12 months of the outbreak, so say continuing on until October of 2011. But, you know, even with that estimate, there are some signs that the fatality rate is decreasing, at least in some areas, and that's according to the UN. The outbreak started in the central area of Haiti, but has been most pronounced in the western region and has involved not so much the temporary camps, but instead urban slum areas and other zones where water and sanitation facilities are lacking. Now, before the October 2010 outbreak, Haiti had not seen cholera in at least 100 years. And the outbreak that raced across South America that some people may remember from 1991 actually didn't reach Haiti. DNA analysis of the bacterium that appears to be prevalent in the current outbreak suggests that it has a closer relationship, a closer genetic relationship, to strains that were detected in South Asia in 2002 and 2008, and less of a relationship with the strain that hit South America in 1991. So it's not really clear how the cholera got to Haiti, but it seems likely that it was introduced by human activity and then found a hospitable environment in situations where there were inadequate supplies of treated chlorinated water and inadequate sanitation.
And can you also talk about how cholera prevention centers and mobile health centers have been important to stemming further cholera cases?
So there are currently about 85 cholera treatment centers, or at least according to the latest figures, and about 192 cholera treatment units, with more cholera treatment facilities, so treatment centers and units, planned over the next few months. And these centers or units receive patients, they offer treatment, and they provide advice regarding measures people can take to avoid becoming infected with cholera. And these might include, you know, washing their hands, treating their water with chlorinated drops or tablets, and filtration and other kinds of preventive measures. Now, several non-governmental organizations and international assistance groups are currently working with the Ministry of Health in Haiti to spread information about water treatment activities and the importance of good hygiene as well as oral rehydration in both preventing and then treating cholera as well. Outreach has involved mobilizing volunteers to travel to vulnerable and often remote communities to share information about prevention and treatment options, sending text messages about prevention measures, putting up posters in public spaces, and working with community centers and religious organizations to spread the word about cholera and how to prevent infection with it.
And one reality that hasn't received as much media attention is gender-based violence. What are conditions in displacement camps like for Haitian women, and what are NGOs and U.S. government agencies doing to alleviate that situation?
So gender-based violence has been and continues to be an issue of concern in Haiti, as it is around the Americas and in many countries of the world. Women and girls were vulnerable to violence and rape before the earthquake, and life in the camps for internally displaced people has put many more women and girls in insecure situations. Among the actions that government agencies and international partners have taken to protect women from gender-based violence are efforts to increase patrols and surveillance in the camps, to light the camps at night to ensure safety, to distribute food, which frequently involves women recipients going to collect food during daylight hours so that people don't have to go at night, and also to distribute that food near the camps so that they don't have to travel great distances, and also to ensure that sanitation facilities are well located and convenient for women and girls. And all of these activities have the potential to reduce the opportunities for violence. Another option is to provide women with income-generating opportunities, which can also reduce their vulnerability to abuse or violence. And the UN Development Program, the World Food Program, and MINUSTAH, which is the United Nations multinational force, which had been in Haiti prior to the earthquake, those three groups, among others, have created at least 30,000 jobs, 40% of which are held by women. So while that is good news, there are still a number of challenges, including the fact that there are an estimated 3,500 children living on the streets of Port-au-Prince, the capital, and these children are extremely vulnerable to abuse, violence, and exploitation. Now, one positive development is that an interagency subcluster for sexual and gender-based violence is working with Haiti's Ministry of Women's Affairs to collect information on the extent of gender-based violence and to articulate recommendations for solutions to address this continuing problem.
Well, Dr. Bliss, thank you so much for joining us today. For interested listeners, please visit www.smartglobalhealth.org to hear other podcasts and to read our most recent blogs.